Hey guys, welcome to Keep Wise with Keepingly. And this is another episode. And with me, I have my co-host, Amira Ravenel-B. So, hey, Amira, welcome to another episode. How are you doing?
Doing great. Excited. Let's do this.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, as you guys know, I'm Daniel Smith, founder of Keepingly, and Keepingly is a platform that is focused on helping homeowners to manage, maintain, and grow the value of their home. And so this week, we have another special guest. And our guest this week is Pierre Calzildia. I hope I didn't butcher his name. So Pierre has been in prop tech for over 15 years. He started his career in New York, on the brokerage side of things, and then he joined Trulia in 2006, where he enjoyed over 8 years building and leading several teams in growth, marketing, and sales. Today, he is the Executive Vice President of Group for Local Logic, a location intelligence company focused on quantifying the build role through their national index that covers the US and Canada on over 18 variables tied to the location. Woo, that sounds fantastic. I'd love to dig into that. So we'll get into that just now. So Pierre has 3 kids, and the fun fact, he did stand-up comedy in New York before embarking on his tech career. He has a degree from Hofstra in computer science and organizational psychology. So Pierre, welcome to Keep Wise with Keeping Me. By the way, Amira, so I just realized that Keep Wise with Keepingly is kind of a tongue twister if you say too fast. So I kind of always have to slow down saying Keep Wise with Keepingly. But anyway.
That is a tongue twister. And I have to say, super excited to see Pierre. I think you have 4 children.
I have four. Yeah, I probably haven't updated that bio.
But we worked together and met each other at Trulia, and he's outstanding. And I can't wait to ask him some questions, because not only is he doing amazing things now, but the trajectory of his career. So we got to start off with the first question. You know, how did real estate find you, or you found real estate here?
Man, what a, you know, I saw this question in the pre-interview notes, and I was like, oh, this is going to be, you know, how do I keep this concise and interesting? Well, okay. My dad always was, you know, he's a Cuban immigrant. And when he came here, he always had the, you know, classic American dream to own a house and, you know, worked really hard to do that. And, you know, I grew up in a world where he owned some properties, and I was very aware of real estate being a thing. And he wanted me to get into real estate, but, you know, I was always like a little bit resistant. So I got into tech first. But then 9/11 happened in New York City. And when 9/11 happened, I was working, and one of my accounts was related to one of the towers that went down. And, you know, I really I'm a New Yorker. And so I didn't know what to do with myself. And at the time, my friend's father was like, you know, you're good in sales. You should do real estate. I think you could do well in real estate. And that's how actually I met a broker and, you know, first got in as an agent. So for my total time in real estate is actually 22 years when you count the brokerage years in New York City.
Wow. And what market were you at?
I was in Brooklyn mostly, but, you know, I grew up in Manhattan. But yeah, all the real estate that I did and worked on, the brokerage I was with at the time was Fillmore. And they had a huge footprint, you know, covering the whole borough. So yeah, it was mostly downtown, like Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn Heights, Flatbush, like over there.
which has totally changed now. So you were actually helping people find homes, right? You were helping them solve the American dream of how do they get a piece of a property, and then what happened after that?
Well, at 06, I went on a listing presentation. I was already a director of e-business for my brokerage, but I still liked to transact real estate. So I go on this listing presentation, and this person whips out a Zestimate on me. And I was like, this is 06, right? And I was like, what is this? What is this thing? What is this estimate? And I left there, went to my office and did all this research. And I was like, oh, no, this is so wrong. And then I discovered Trulia. And I was like, these guys are doing it right. And I became Trulia's first paying customer that year. And then by the end of that year, talked them into hiring me as one of their first sales hires. And so that's how I got into Trulia. And then that was the whole journey from there. Fun times.
Fantastic. That's a bit of a backstory, Pierre. And so, understanding from where you started, from the family side of it to, getting into the more transactional side, how have you, I would say, and I would say marrying the tech aspect of it, how have you been able to navigate? Because I do believe that there is a bit of a difference in terms of what coming from the real estate side or being in the real estate side versus being the tech side. How do you navigate? Because even for me, talking to agents, you have a different mindset or they have a different mindset, and coming from a tech side, you try to navigate that. So how have you been able to really navigate and meet the needs of both parties?
I think those 5, 6 years in Brooklyn were super formative because one of my responsibilities was to help take this brokerage. It was quite large. We had hundreds of agents, and it was a family-owned brokerage called Fillmore. Help take this brokerage, which had a great president who was tech forward and was a younger president at the time, a CEO. And basically, I cut my teeth convincing old Italians in Brooklyn to go online. I cut my teeth on, convincing people that were in the industry 20, 30 years already in, 2006. They were in the industry since the 80s. These were people who, they fought against fax machines when fax machines came out. And I cut my teeth for those 5 years, showing them, convincing them how to go digital, how to go online, how to talk to the consumer online, how to help people get information. I mean, literally, when I started in real estate, less than 3% of listings had photos on them. That's 2001. 2001, right? Less than 3% of listings had photos on them in 2001. So it wasn't until, sites like Trulia came out, which is, and then people like me and others who really were like, no, we need to give people photos. We need to have information. And then it started, to all make sense. So for me, it's really like understanding the consumer need. I think it's also my age that I'm at that sweet spot of, I don't even know what generation I'm in. I'm a late 70s kid who installed the first computers in my elementary school and my high school. And and was anyway, so I'm just in that sweet spot of transition, who understands how to translate tech to others and understands both sides of the coin. So I understand what the consumers expect when they go online. I understand what the professionals need. I think that's really been the sweet spot for me of bridging that gap.
And that's fantastic in terms of, how you have been able to do that. I would say, just coming out of that. So basically, and not to hit on your stand-up comedy because I don't believe I could ever rival that. But basically, it went from the dark ages, basically bringing everybody into light.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. 100%. Yeah.
So having seen that, I want to push forward into the future then.
Yeah.
What do you think is on the horizon next in the industry, considering that you started when you're fighting against things like fax machines and those were
Yep.
just coming? Where do you see the future heading?
Wait, wait, wait.
There's
Before, wait, wait.
oh.
Before you answer that, because what
Yeah.
I think there's another dot I want to just call out
Oh, here.
here. The dot where you're at right now, where you're using data to help customers. Before you talk about the future, can you tell us
Yeah.
where this dot is? Because this is pretty big
Yeah.
where you are now.
Yeah, thanks, Amira. Yeah, 100%. So right now I'm at Local Logic. We are sort of secret in a way, because we're not really consumer facing in that sense. Like if you're on Cold War banker Bain in Seattle, or you're using Kais in Florida, or you're working with Zumper or Redfin, our stuff is on there. And it's also all over Canada and many other sites, rental sites, like Rental Beast, et cetera. And what we do is quantify location. Everybody, the old saying, right, Daniel, is, location, 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 right? And it's very cheesy, but everybody understands what that means. It means this in a practical sense. An apartment in Manhattan is worth what it's worth because it's in Manhattan. And the apartment in the countryside is worth what it's worth because it's in the countryside. If you swap those places, the values change. And that is obvious at that level. But what happens when you compare Second Avenue and 70th Street to York Avenue and 70th Street? There's a difference in living in just those two, three blocks. And so what we do is quantify every aspect of the physical location that you interact with every day. Because when you buy a house, it's like marriage. They say like you're marrying the family. Well, in real estate, you're marrying the house, but you're really marrying the neighborhood. And that whole neighborhood is an equation that is left to gut prior to my company, prior to what we do. It's left to, oh, it's a nice neighborhood. Oh, I drove around. Oh, it smells good in the air. You come by the different day, it's going to be a different story. And so what we do is quantify that, make it easy for a consumer who's looking at a place to rent or to buy, or an investor, or even government. We can talk about those things. There's different questions that they have, but to understand how location interacts with the human and what your needs are. So if you need to live near groceries and schools and you want to have parks and you want to have a healthy lifestyle, your location dictates a lot of that. So how do you help people understand that? And that's what we do. We really expose that location factor and make it data. So you're not making it on like somebody's opinion that this is a good neighborhood. You can go by data that it's that. And when I say good, I don't mean the context of good or bad of safe or unsafe. I mean good for you and your needs, right? Like if I'm a millennial renter, there's things I'm looking for that a retiree is not looking for. And they're both great neighborhoods for that use case, right? Right. And so that's the kind of thing that we do.
And I think you're right. That's exactly what today a lot of users are looking for. When people are going out to look for homes, at least when I was looking as well, it's like, where do I want to live? Where do my kids to grow up? And I think, some friends that are younger than me, got millennials who are like, where do I want to live? Because I need to date that partner, right? Where's the access to social life? So it's super interesting of the work that you're doing now. But I want to go back to Daniel's question, which is really around like the future, the innovation, because I think that data piece is important. So what do you see? Open up your ball, crystal ball for me.
There's a lot of innovation happening, I think, in different stages, right? The home discovery, actually, let's go take a step back. Because they the home discovery process, like we could assume that Zillow and Trulia and everybody has solved home search, right? But the reality is that there's still tremendous opportunities there. Right now, we still are forced to search by bedroom, bath, and price at the most fundamental way. Companies like mine, LocalLogic, we introduce layers on those search experiences where you can search bedroom, bath, price, and near a grocery store, right? Like this is really what, and that's just starting to happen. Believe it or not, I mean, it's sort of nonsense. It all seems crazy that you can't make that part of your search today on every single site. I believe that we'll see that come. We'll see that ability to really like make the location part of the search at the discovery, level. Then there's the home ownership models. Home ownership models are just being broken completely. And I say broken, I mean in a really good way. We're seeing, home sharing become more real, right? Where you're buying into an asset for a time. Obviously, we already know the impact of Airbnb and such. People not necessarily buying to live in the place, but buying to rent it out. So there's a huge market now for just personal investment of like buying an apartment to rent and not even live in it. There is financing that's changing now, with new. I mean, they're even talking about, I think I read something the other day about 50-year mortgages. There's a lot of interesting things happening in every piece of the experience. And then this home ownership itself, the act of buying the home, that COVID had a tremendous impact into the digitization of the transaction. And then that pushes further now into home ownership. And now we're seeing so many startups pop up that are about how do you manage your home? How do you actually live in it, maintain it, understand the how to drive it, how to impact its value, or how to just maintain it, right? How to just like, you go from renting your whole life to now owning a house, and you have to all of a sudden know how to handle a water heater. And like, how do you help somebody with that, right? So I think like really there's still so much innovation to be done in every single part of homeownership. And then not to go long on this, there's also construction. And there's also ADUs, like we're seeing in California, where now there's whole startups that are built to do second houses in the back, right? Or other companies, like I think it's called Icon Construction, where they're doing 3D printing of homes. So super efficient, super expensive, able to scale and really solve homeownership problems by making homeownership easier and more accessible and a better price point. So I mean, and also environmentally safe. Like the amount of GHG gases released in construction is actually huge. So being able to build in a sustainable way. So yeah, there's a lot, man. I'm sort of seeing it all, and I sorry if I dumped a lot on you there, but there is a lot of innovation, and there's even more I could go into.
No, that's fantastic. And the reason why I asked the question at this time, and Amira interjected, with his, but I wanted to just basically build the framework end to end in terms of, and I think that where you sit now is really important, especially with that data part. So my next question, really, I just want to understand from the data point view, because we are. We had one of our guests who was the who is the National Association of Realtors, and she's the chief economist or deputy chief economist. And so she had a lot of data points. And for us, those data points were really fascinating in our conversation. So for you and where you sit in your experience, and what you're seeing now, what is some of like the most interesting data points that you have seen recently that excites you about where the market is currently and where, where the possibilities are, kind of also looking at that future state. Because from where we sit and what we do at Keepingly, but also on this podcast, it's helping to really orient people about where they need to be thinking. That first-time homeowner, that buyer who is, eager to get a home, but not necessarily sure of what they should be looking at. So we really want to help zero in on some of those things. So what are you seeing, or what have you seen, and what excites you in that space?
I'm gonna pick a slice here, and we can decide how deep you want to go on it. But to me, the environment and the impact of the environment, how housing impacts environment and how our decisions as citizens impact the environment, right? There's a lot of writing, at least in my world, and a lot of really good reading about how cities are constructed, how new suburbs are made. And when somebody chooses to live in a suburb away from the city, there are choices being made that might increase our pollution, right? Now you're going to drive for groceries. Now you're going to need to drive your kids to school and wait 10, 15 minutes at a pickup line. Like a lot of things like this happens when you start to go to suburbs, right? And what we're seeing, because we work with, developers, government, and consumers, is a push here on the development and government side. And I think we're starting to seeing housing that's going to come out that's going to be more community-based. I'm not talking about the classic like Arizona sprawling single family house community. I'm talking more of if you think of like Emeryville maybe or something like that, right? Where you have like multifamily, you have shopping, you have retail, you have office, you have the ability to live, work, and play in a good area with the need of a car being minimal, right? And so I think what you're going to start seeing in the real estate world, and I think, and this is going to impact values, it's going to impact the market, it's going to impact, I think, housing law, taxes, right? When you think about what the government's going to do to encourage the reduction of greenhouse gases, the reduction of energy consumption, you know. So if you're buying right now an older home that's in an older community that is 30 minutes out of downtown, and you know, and it has an oil tank and all this stuff, like these are things. And by the way, that's what I sound like, and that's where I live because I bought my house, you know, 4 years ago, and I regret it for everything I'm telling you right now, because you know. The more sustainable thing would be to live in another community where I could walk to my grocery store. I can, you know, have more access to conveniences, not required to get in my car so much, lower the, you know, when you think of energy costs, you think of, you know, interest rates, you think of, you know, the taxes on these things. That's all part of the home ownership bubble. So if you're picking to put yourself out in the suburbs or out, you know, far away, and you don't have that kind of community, so that's the magic spot here, right? Is that the builders and the developers and government are seeing this, and they're now rethinking that way that they're going to build those new communities. So if you do live now out there, you're not going to be in the boonies. You might have that ability to still be, you know, away from the city, but actually still have that 15-minute community, right? Where you can get your needs met every single day and not have to go in your car for an hour to go to Costco, right? Like those are the things that I think we should be looking at as home buyers today. And what's coming.
Yeah, that's super. Go ahead, Daniel, you had a question?
No, I was just saying fantastic. You know, I think that, you know, it zeroes in on what we need to be looking at, and not necessarily a question, but more of a comment kind of. You know, I think that all the research and data that I've been seeing really talking about how we look and how we have to be intentional. And I like a lot of what you said in terms of, you know, just about the sustainability, because for one of the things that I'm looking at is, you know, just that whole conversation of there's the environmental sustainability of it, but also for me, what I look at, you know, because the platform that we're building is really about homeowners and helping homeowners to be able to maximize the value. But that whole conversation of home ownership sustainability, how do I
Yes.
pass on this asset from one generation to another? How do I make sure that I'm putting the tools, or how do I get the toolkit to be able to help me to manage this asset so that it can pass on from me to, you know,
Right.
my next generation to, you know, a generation further. And also to be able to, you know, in our previous podcast, we were talking about the wealth gap and, you know, reducing the wealth gap. How do we make sure that those things?
Yes,
So I
sir.
think that a lot of what you said plays into that and helps us to be able to think about it in really intentional ways, not only for you and I, but also as a society, what we need to be looking at.
I mean, you don't have to look too far just to add on that comment. Like, just to, when you want to think what you should be thinking about as a consumer, follow the money, right? There is an article that you're going to see if your listeners or yourselves go do some research, you'll start seeing that many huge investors are dumping assets. They're like, we're not paying for it anymore. There was just a huge building in Manhattan that they were like, we're going to default. We no longer want this building. A building. There's two office towers in LA that another financial institution, we're done. We're not paying for it anymore. They're abandoning it. Because on the balance sheet, it doesn't make sense anymore. Nobody wants to, you know, go to the office tower. It's a huge burden on environmental, because the laws are passing, right? So what's going to happen in a lot of these buildings is the landlords, the laws are passing where they have to change the lighting, they have to change the water, they have to change the heating. And these are laws that are passing by 2030 in many markets. And so you have to pay attention to that. That's what's happening right now in government and private equity and like that level. Eventually that's going to come to the citizen. It's going to come to the citizen, and then you're going to be in a house. And it's I live in Canada right now. I'm an American, but I live in Canada. But in Canada, where I live, they have banned new oil tanks. They're banned. They're gone. You can no longer replace your oil tank where I live in Quebec, right? That's gone. So now if my oil tank breaks, I have to go electric. I have to go electric because here, by the way, it's water, it's hydro. So it's actually one of the cheapest power markets in the North America, because it's all, you know, written, you know, hydro. But that's an example of what's happening. And you need to be aware of that. When you think about where you're living, you should understand, like, where's the power coming from? Where's it, you know, like, you know, what's the sustainability of this area, and take that into consideration.
All the things you're talking about are the non-sexy things that most
homeowners really don't.
It's not sexy. I mean, you know, talking to homeowners all the time, and when you talk to them, how do we do that, right? How do we shift the focus, right? It's always been about, you know, the bedrooms, the bathrooms. Really, it's more of the interior. It's not even the exterior as much as even neighborhoods. And so where do you see, you know, the shift that homeowners are now looking at? Because I think there's a lot of what you just said was just really interesting. I think homeowners are going to start to think a little bit about, particularly around sustainability. Mm-hmm. I think the pandemic has also shifted the way people think about homeownership and what a home looks like. What are you starting to see from the homeowner's perspective as you're interacting and working with them?
So what we're doing is people want to know. People want to understand this, and they don't know how to get that information. So what we're doing at LocalLogic is we're starting to look at the environmental impact of location, not just like the actual impact of the location, but your choice of picking that location and trying to make that visible, right? So that you have the information. Because if a consumer doesn't have the information, if you don't know that living in this neighborhood is going to impact, you know, the increase of greenhouse gases, and you just don't know, you innocently are going to move there because the price is lower. If you don't know that that area is forecasted to be underwater in 30 years, and it seems so far away, right? When you hear that number, in 2050, this is going to be underwater. You know, it seems like, oh, well, I'm not going to be here in 2050. But you have to, when what Daniel talked about earlier, if you're trying to build wealth, you're trying to build generational wealth, buying in areas where the forecast for 30 years is an average temperature of 110 degrees 40 times a year and flood waters up to your ankles, you probably want to avoid that if you're trying to build for your generation. So for us, it's about exposing that, right? If we can expose that information, then people will be better informed, and we make it digestible. So it's not some like mumbo jumbo, you know, it's like digestible and easy to understand. That like, hey, be aware, this is, you know, this is the fact. Now, depending on your situation, you may not care about that because, you know, you don't care. But others who are maybe thinking about generational wealth, thinking about, okay, I want to hand this house down, or I want to have multiple, I don't want to flip it. That's where these things come into play.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. And when I think about you saying it, it's just like, you know, I mean.
Oh, I lost you.
Yeah, I think we lost
her. Okay, she's back. She's back. Okay,
I've been talking by myself this entire time.
Yeah, for 3 seconds. Yeah,
you missed my whole story about my home.
Probably the best part. Oh, you lost your audio. Okay, now it's
my audio. Okay, that's okay. I'm gonna have Daniel ask the question just so that I make sure that you hear the question. Go ahead.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, a lot of things that you just said really jumped out at me because. Again, I have this whole concept about, even around, I would say, home ownership sustainability. But, you know, the thing, and I think that what your product is built on, you know, LocalLogic, and how it really helps, is that as a homeowner, I realize you don't know what you don't know, is the number one principle of home ownership. And in our previous podcast, we had this conversation about, you know, have we glamorized the whole experience of home ownership? You know, we've been taught, hey, the American dream. You taught, you know, hey, you know, we go to school, we get a job, you grow up, you get married, you know, white picket fence, you know, all that kind of stuff. And now we're here, and, you know, between the price of housing, which is, you know, we had that conversation about the missing middle previously, to, you know, just the price of housing, you know, when I decide to get into the market, because stats and numbers recently showed, hey, there are possibly 28 million people who want to become homeowners. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about any of those things that you just highlighted. Let's be honest. Let's be blunt about it. They're not thinking, No, it's just like, hey, I want a house. I want to be on my own. I want independence. Those are the things that, you know, we've been typically taught to think of. And so with your data points, you're really shifting the whole trajectory of how people should be thinking. So my question to you is really, how do we ensure that people get the information and data to make the correct decisions?
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. One, I'll push back a little and say that the today's buying generation does care about this. The issue is that they are sourcing it. They're doing their research, right? You know, and we see it. Like we know they are, right? And we know that they care about it. There's been a couple surveys done. I don't know of one done in the U.S., but I know one done here in Quebec just last month, where a very significant, I wish I had it top of my head, but I could send it to you guys after, but as very significant part of the population wants to understand environmental choice. But I still believe that there is a huge half of the population that definitely has no lens on this. So for that question, I think it's really, you know, what we're doing, right? Like, you know, we're working with the top real estate portals, the top real estate brokerages. We're creating a report that anybody can get for any home on demand, right? Like we're doing things so that the information can be available and reasonably, you know, found and easy to understand. And I think we're not the only ones, right? You know, there's a few companies out there that are thinking about this and organizations that are thinking about this. We partner with a lot of them, and we try to bring their data out to show it to the world. And, you know, this new generation, this current generation, that's the current home buyer, current renters that are maybe a little priced out right now and frustrated, they are thinking about these things. And I will say that there's also, part of the issue is we have a housing shortage, believe it or not, still, by the millions. So until that catches up, we're going to continue to see these high prices, which is where low cost construction, but not cheap, doesn't mean cheap, right? Low cost doesn't mean cheap. It means scalable. It means modular. It means that it's, 3D printed, that it's done with more efficient, with less waste. So you're not throwing away a third of your supplies. You have to count that in the cost. So those are the things that will help, I think, close the gap. And legislation, ultimately, right? The SEC is passing legislation that's going to require investment funds to have public measures on ESG, environmental, social, and governance policies. And when you start investing in these funds, they're going to have to be transparent about their stance and their portfolios, which is also why you're going to see divesting of assets that are no longer green, or the same way that they would balance their books for financial, these huge funds are going to balance their books on carbon. And that those laws are coming, and that's going to, again, it's going to start, it always starts with government and policy, and then it goes to the citizens, right?
I want to ask, how do you see that impacting citizens?
I hope it's positive right now. Like, I hope it's positive. Obviously, like I just shared an example where here in Quebec, the day that my oil tank breaks, I will not be able to replace it. So that could be bad if I can't afford to replace it. But they do have subsidies and benefits to do it. I know in the US there's several organizations that are currently set up to expose energy tax credits, energy credits, and how to help people switch to more sustainable power sources. And so I think like there's a burden, there's a cost of burden for sure. There's gonna be a cost, but we've also seen the government do subsidies for, solar panels and for switching to electric cars and for doing, your there's multiple grants in some counties to upgrade your windows, right? To reduce your heat, your heat loss, and to reduce your energy conservation. Thank you. So those things are happening. I think we need to do more to expose those things. But there is definitely, you know, work being done that I think involves cost, but also involves just information that a citizen needs to know. Like, oh, I didn't know that I could get a grant for $5,000 to switch my windows. That makes a difference, you know? And so I think that information coming out more and being more prevalent is also important.
Yeah. And I would say that through the Inflation Reduction Act, the current administration here has been doing a lot of work around that. And so this year, I know some of those opportunities kick in this year for homeowners to be able to do, you know, things around electrification, right, around, you know, the windows and other items in your house. And I think that even with that, there is a lot of, so I don't think that you're, well, I would say the information that you've shared is really important in terms of at least even here. But even with the way how, you know, the consumer looks at it, I think that what I have found is that, and not that my, not to say that the way I was, you know, presenting it was different, but I'm just saying that this is not historically what we have been taught. I think has been that disconnect. And, you know, depending on the lens that you come from, you know, you're listening to people who think that, hey, you know, the cost of housing is too high. Well, the fact is that this is kind of the market and the area that we live in right now. And so as part of the evolution of human life, but we have to also evolve just the way we think. In terms of how we think about it. And that was one of the larger, and I think that based on what you guys are doing, it helps to push that forward. And if we get to the end state or, you know, further down the road, I think that that's kind of where we are being pushed in terms of how we are, we get to think about our house rather than thinking about, you know, one of the things I say is, you know, we just shouldn't be thinking our house as just this nice euphoria of home ownership, but right, more of like, okay, how do I manage my asset, the house, because mm-hmm. your house, most of us should be thought of an asset, but we, because we have romanticized the whole concept of home ownership so much, people, totally, you know, don't necessarily think about, hey, well, this is an asset and I need to just make very strategic decisions. It's like, no, I still love my house or this or that, you know, and I think that that kind of gets us into trouble sometimes.
Yeah, you're right. And that's where I think these platforms that are helping people understand that their home is an asset, that they need to manage it like an E-Trade, you know, account. They need to manage, you know, their repairs. They need to manage their, you know, their maintenance. They need to manage, you know, the age of their roof. Like, these are things that are just like people don't think about. And when, and especially if you're coming from being a renter to being a homeowner, it's such a huge jump. And, you know, we need services that are out there to help the consumer in that home ownership experience, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. And I could just say, like, you know, with the Home Dispatch and all our research, you know, there are definitely people that think of it as an asset. I'm going to be the one to say it. It's definitely more of from the masculine viewpoint. You know, we dealt with over, you know, 82% of the women and who make most of the decisions. And it's definitely not something that they're thinking about as the same way, which I think is also a conversation that needs to be happening, because it is a utility that they're using, right, to take care of their family, which requires for them to be able to figure out how to configure it to make it do that. But I think it's a combination of both that's important. And I will just call out, so everyone loves to send me home stuff. I just got, there's this few folks on TikTok, right, for the next generation who's actually saying, hey, why should we even have homeownership, right? Because, you know, you got, they're seeing these high costs, they're seeing all the repairs, they're not finding an easy way to think about, like, how is this really cost effective? So I actually think there's some education that's due there about how you can think about it as an asset, continue to have it grow for you, and be able to have the tools to manage it. I think it's what our future needs. But I know we're getting close to time. I just wanted to say to ask Pierre one more question, I know, before we start to wrap up, which is, you know, Pierre, you know, you worked with the span of people in your career. You worked with homeowners. Since I'm thinking about homeowners right now, you probably, you know, you've got a big team. What do you tell the next generation around, you know, thinking about home ownership? Like, what is the real scoop that you're sharing to them?
I absolutely still believe in the wealth building of home ownership. And not just for the sake of wealth, but for the sake of like, you know, we are all going to age. We're all going to become older people, and having a home that when you're older and you know Social Security is questionable, it's a source of funds, right? So the pure, you know, functional thing. Like I just had a talk with somebody here who's like barely 20 years old 2 days ago, and I was like, look, if you can afford to buy a studio and rent it instead of renting it, it is cheaper in many markets still to buy the studio. The problem is a down payment. That's the problem. Like the problem of why people can't buy a house is because of the down payment requirements. So you need to look at those government options, you know, where you can do low money down. But if you can afford to buy that studio apartment, you're gonna make more money off of that than you will paying rent. And when you're older and you're finished with school, instead of paying rent, you can then rent out that studio apartment and then go live wherever you want in the world and pay your mortgage and continue to build wealth and really forget that you even own it and just continue to build wealth on that. And so to me, it's still very practical. I still believe in the numbers of homeowner, you know, the financial numbers of homeownership and the ability to create equity in an asset, which you cannot do when you rent. And you know, so I still advise anybody, like a lot of my team are young folks who actually already own one or two homes already, or one or two apartments. And they have that mindset of like, you know, I bought my first little studio. I bought it when I was in, you know, like I saved up all my money for it. And like now they flipped it into a one bedroom. Then they flipped that one into a two bedroom, and they're sitting here in their late 20s and they've already flipped three apartments. And
Nice.
they're not rich. They're not rich kids. They weren't from wealthy families. These are kids who just saved their money, understood the math, and said, yeah, I'm gonna save my down payment for that studio, and I'm not gonna, you know, go blow it on Fortnite skins. And you know, there's a joke for you. And that's really, when you do the math on it, it's crazy, you know, like what people will spend on video games and nonsense. If you put that towards, you know, a little fund towards down payment, you're gonna crush it, and you're gonna be able to get your first place and build equity, and you know, like, go you, right? So like, that's the problem though. The problem is the down payment, and everybody wants to buy the apartment in like Manhattan, right? Like everybody like wants to buy the like the spot downtown San Francisco. No, buy the spot that you can afford. And that's near schools, near transit, near parks. You can walk to get your groceries. You can walk and get a coffee. That, like, you know, is a reasonable spot. Maybe you got a 15-minute commute to downtown or 20-minute. Like, you're gonna make it. You're gonna be so good, and the price point's gonna be half of downtown, and you're gonna have equity. So anyway, that's my location tip.
Pierre, and I think, and you are into the location, location, location. But I would say that you've really hit the nail on the head, and I think that what you're alluding to is really that whole concept of delayed gratification. I think that sometimes we have become such an entitled society that we think we need to get everything on demand, and so I think that you know that is one of those salient points. To wrap up, my last question for you is this. If you had a magic wand to change anything in the housing industry currently, based on where you sit, what would it be?
I just sort of teased it. I think the down payment is a problem. I
Okay.
mean, you know, people like these kids are coming out of college, they're getting $100,000 jobs. They're getting $110,000 jobs. Like, you know, not everybody is obviously, but if you know, you can come out of school today and get way more paid than I got paid. I was making $45,000 my first job when I was 22 years old. You know, like that is the end, you know. That's not what kids are making now when they get out of college with a good degree. They're making way more than that. And to me, the dilemma is it's hard to save a down payment because the rent is so high. As one of my favorite New York politicians will say, rent's too damn high. You know, and you know, the rent's too high, so it's hard to save. And then you and there is a quality of life that you're trying to maintain. So I think we need to find a way to change, I think even that down payment factor would be fascinating. Now, there are some companies doing really cool things with that. Well, where you can sort of turn a rental into a home ownership, or as you pay your rent, it goes towards your down payment, right? And some of the names of them elude me right now. I'm sorry, but we can do some quick research after and I can send it to you. But there are companies like that where, like, as you pay rent to them, they're helping you build towards a home. And I think, you know, we need more of those options. Like, it shouldn't be so hard for me to remember the one or two companies that do it. There should be 100, right? Like, you know, there should be a way, like a great company that's worth talking about, tangentially related, is Isuzu, I want to say is how you spell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. And they're focused on that whole rental conversation.
Isuzu is about building credit, right?
Yep. Yep.
You know, building credit. He started that company. He immigrated, and his family, you know, didn't have credit, and he started the company to help people build credit by paying rent. And, like, you know, these are the challenges to homeownership: credit and down payment. And so I think we need more. If I had a magic wand, it'd be a way for that to be easy, because that really is the gateway. If you could get a good credit score and you can get a down payment, or if you could just prove that I have an income, let me buy this house. Like, I think we'd see wealth creation. We'd see the market move. We'd see more people able to buy. And I think it'd be, a healthy market, hopefully for all, right? Which is really the bottom line, is that it's not just, you know, everybody else is fine. They got big money. They got their big down payments. They're fine. But how do you get that first time home buyer, that first time immigrant, that first kid that graduated? Like, how does that person get started? And we need to find ways to enable that group to be able to buy into real estate, right? And I think it's just, you know, I got lucky that my dad was a hardworking immigrant who, like, saved his ass, you know, saved everything he could, and, like, you know, put it towards. So we, you know, he's a superintendent, you know, he put everything towards, you know, real estate, so that we could have something when we grew up. And that was great. You know, I still paid for college myself, but at least we had a home. And I think that's the part, is if we can make that more available to all, I think it'd be huge.
That's fantastic. And I would say that, you know, I know there are some programs like the Bank of America program, some special purpose credit programs that are out there that help, you know, first-time homeowners, especially minorities. So there are some things available, but I agree with you, there are not enough. And we're in a very interesting conundrum whereby between the supply and between the price of everything, it is problematic sometimes, especially for that younger person who wants to, or that person who is the first time, or that person who has been renting all their life and can't find a way to find that 3% down payment, or that 7%, whichever it is, you know, depending on the market. So there are some new solutions coming out, and we do believe that, you know, hopefully we do see a greater uptick in the market, and, you know, give people better options. But, you know, that's it. But Pierre, we're so very thankful that you joined us. Amira, any parting words?
No, I just want to say thank you, Pierre, for being here, for having us have this conversation and dropping some gems today. So thank you, Pierre.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure, Amira. Love you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you guys are doing great work. All right. Well, I'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.